This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I am Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck.
And I'm coming to you from Finch's right outside my door. 4th of July right outside my door. Also, rain is about to start raining on my metal roof. So, yeah, audio quality. So, forgive us in advance if it sounds like I am under siege, because I am.
Aren't we all?
It's a metaphor for... Good point, Sadie. Good point. So just enjoy the auditory metaphor for life right now as we tell you some kind of terrible tale. What is the terrible tale tonight, Sadie Ray?
Well, this is the double family annihilator, George Jefferson Hassel.
Oh, God. No, double.
Yeah. Nope. Yep. And it's an old-timey one, but it's a very interesting old-timey one.
Great.
I want to give a quick shout out to Delaney Bartlett, who goes by the Murder Nerd, who put together a very nice blog post about the case that I relied on to help me put the story together. You can find her channel on YouTube as well. And this was a listener suggestion, and just as per usual, I didn't write down who suggested it. I don't know what is wrong with me. Thank you.
We love you and keep them coming. We appreciate them.
So in the first few weeks of December 1927, 38-year-old George Hassel invited the town of Farwell, Texas, to his estate sale. He said his wife Susie and 8 of her 9 children, 21-year-old Alton, 15-year-old Virgil, 13-year-old Maudie, 11-year-old Russell, 7-year-old David, 6-year-old Johnny, 4-year-old Nanny Martha, and 22-year-old Samuel, had gone ahead to Blair, Oklahoma to live with family, while he stayed behind and sold off their belongings to fund the move.
Oh boy, no way.
So many children.
That's crazy. That is crazy. With a quick side note, the best names for ever. Like,
so,
ever.
And Nanny Martha, like, please.
Nina Martha, get out of here with Nanny Martha.
No.
That is very overwhelming.
Yes. As friends and neighbors arrived at the sale, they were just as curious about what was for sale as they were about how it was possible that the very large family had left so quickly and without saying goodbye to anyone. Hassel explained that it had been a last-minute decision and there just wasn't time for goodbyes. I thought a lot about, we have a 97-year-old grandmother who's still living.
Mm-hmm.
She was born in 25, I think, and I thought about her a lot. When writing the story, because of the stories that she told of her childhood and like telephones, and everybody knew everybody's business at all times, right?
Time. They would like listen in on each other's phone calls and stuff.
Yeah. She was just telling me the other day that she was best friends with the phone operator and the librarian, and between the two of them, and she worked for the post office. So the three of them like knew everybody's business at all time.
Yeah.
And so I think about that a lot. With the story, like, of course the whole town was coming. It was probably like 35 people came to the estate sale and was like, where did half of our town go?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So George and Susie had moved to Farwell just 2 years before and were described as night and day. Hassel was a large man in all ways. His body was as large as his personality. He was also known to be a heavy drinker, have a quote, eye for the ladies, and a terrible temper.
Mm-hmm.
Susie, on the other hand, was described as, quote, a devout Christian who read her Bible daily. Susie had been married to Hassel's brother, Thomas, and the two had 8 children together. When Thomas passed away after a mule kicked him to death, Susie, who was pregnant with their 9th child, contacted Hassel and asked him to come help, quote, bring the crops in.
I think that happened a lot back then.
Yes. Yeah, I think
I mean, even our own grandmother like knew our grandfather's previous, was like best friends with her grandfather's previous wife.
Yeah, nursed her through her cancer.
Yeah, and then sort of just married our grandfather to help him with the kids, and Bingo, bango, Sadie and I exist.
Right, right. Yeah, 100%. I think that definitely it was a brother's duty in some way, you know, like if he was unmarried to marry his brother's wife.
Wild.
So Hassel agreed, and 4 months after Thomas died, Hassel and Susie got married.
Wow.
Soon after the wedding, Susie gave birth to her youngest child, Samuel, and Hassel moved them all to Texas and rented a farmhouse. So as people gathered for the sale, they couldn't help but notice that it seemed as if all the family's belongings were still there. Clothes for all the children and Susie's Bible, which she treasured, was among the items being sold. When one of the neighbor's wagons went through the backyard during the sale and it got stuck in newly dug dirt, Hassel was quick to tell everyone that despite the fact that he was getting ready to move out of state, he had just built a new root cellar at his rented farmhouse.
Likely story.
Mm-hmm. After the sale, Hassel prepared to leave. His landlord rented the farmhouse to new tenants who started to move in. Hassel told them he was almost ready to leave, but needed to clean one more room. They found him with all of his belongings stacked up against the wall, scrubbing the floor of the room. After he was done cleaning, he still didn't leave, and the new tenants ended up letting him stay for a few days. One night after dinner, Hassel said he wasn't feeling well and went to his room. A few minutes later, he called out to the new tenants and asked them to call the doctor and the police. They found Hassel laying in his bed in a pool of his own blood.
What?
It turned out Hassel had stabbed himself 3 times in the abdomen and had to be rushed to the hospital for surgery.
What?
While Hassel was in the hospital, he was said to be in a decent mood, laughing with the hospital staff. When authorities tried to send Susie a telegram to let her know what had happened, they were told that Susie wasn't in the small Oklahoma town. This raised the suspicions of police, who decided to search the farmhouse. In Hassel's room, behind the boxes, stacked against the wall, they found blood splatter. So they decided to search the property and quickly came across the new root cellar.
Mm-hmm.
When they dug up the newly disturbed land, they found Susie and 8 of her 9 children buried in a shallow grave.
Oh, God.
Their bodies having been carefully arranged. They were wrapped in blankets, were all in their nightclothes, and under Susie's body, police found an axe.
That's rough.
Yelp. So just a trigger warning for graphic details. An examination of the family showed that Susie had been severely beaten. Her face and skull had been crushed.
Ah, fuck.
The 2 oldest boys, Alton and Virgil, had been shot with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
Russell, the 3rd oldest boy, had his skull crushed, and all the victims, except for Alton, had stockings tied around their necks.
Wow.
When police confronted Hassel, he immediately confessed, saying, "I did it. I did it." He would later tell authorities that on the night of December 5th, he'd been drinking, and he and Susie got into a fight. You want to know what they were fighting about? Because it's terrible.
Tobacco. I'm trying to think the old-timiest thing you could fight over. Petticoats.
Right. She accused Hassel of sexually abusing his 13-year-old niece or stepdaughter, Maddie.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
The newspapers at the time called what he did an affair.
Oh, God. People, come on.
And said, Hassel said in his sworn confession, quote, "It was plain enough to see that she was in a family way, all right."
Oh, my God.
Although Hassel never admitted to raping Maddie, it was clear that she was pregnant at the time of her murder.
Mm.
During the argument, Hassel left the house and drank a pint of whiskey. And then he went back inside where he and Susie continued to fight. He got so angry that he picked up a ball peen hammer that Susie kept on her bedside table and hit her in the face with it 2 times. He then strangled her, and when he realized that she was still alive, he tightly wrapped a stocking around her neck and then hit her in the head with an axe.
Oh, my God.
So Hassel told police, quote, "I hit her 2 times before I could stop myself, and then I shut her wind off with my hand to keep the sound in."
Oof.
And then all blood commenced running everywhere.
Oh, man, that is not a good way to say that, dude.
No, it's the worst way to say anything ever.
That's a very passive way to say it, too. You didn't have anything to do it with it. Mm-hmm. It's just the blood. That's just what blood does. Yes. No, bro, blood stays in bodies. It does not commence running everywhere.
No, no. Yeah, it was a lot of that. Like, his whole confession was just like, well, and then I just had to because, well, yeah, no, you didn't. No, you fucking didn't.
Nope.
So once he realized what he had done, he decided he had no other choice but to kill all of the children as well. He started with the baby, not yet 2 years old, who was sleeping in the same room where his mother was murdered. Hassel strangled Samuel with a stocking. He then went to each of the youngest children, moving up in age, doing the same to them.
God, why? There's no reason. No reason whatsoever.
No, he could have just left.
He's very easily. Very easily. What are they going to do?
Right.
Nothing.
Nope.
Get on a pony and come find you? Right. No.
When he got to 11-year-old Russell, the young boy woke up and started to fight for his life. The struggle woke his brother, 15-year-old Virgil, who joined the fight. Hassel said Virgil even managed to grab a brick and hit Hassel with it a number of times. Uh-huh. But in the end, Hassel was able to get his shotgun and shoot Virgil. Russell almost managed to escape, but Hassel caught up with the boy and choked him until he was unconscious and then hit him in the head with an axe as well.
God, what a horror show.
No. He then strangled pregnant Maddie, the one he'd been accused of raping. Over the next few days, Hassel worked at digging the mass grave and cleaning up the crime scene. Unfortunately, his killing spree was not over, and Susie's oldest boy, Alton, had been out of town working when his family was murdered and wouldn't return for a few days.
God.
Instead of fleeing, Hassel waited 5 days for him to come home. When Alton finally arrived, Hassel told the young man that his mom and siblings had left for a few days to visit family in Oklahoma. Hassel and Alton slaughtered a chicken for dinner that night and then played cards until Alton went to bed.
Oh my God, this guy sucks.
Sucks. With a capital S.
Is after something no good.
Terrible. After Alton went to sleep, Hassel drank whiskey and then put a shotgun to Alton's head and pulled the trigger.
What the fuck?
Hassel told police the initial killing was in a moment of passion, and then he couldn't stop. The blood later found behind the suitcases was Alton's. The only child of Susie's to survive was her oldest daughter, Nora, who lived with her husband in another state. She was supposed to visit her family at the time of the murders, but had been delayed and hadn't been able to make it.
God, what on earth? My God, being that girl, having to deal with...
No, absolutely no. Not okay. I cannot imagine.
So many people.
The town of Farwell was horrified by Hassel's confession. He had to be transported from one jail to another in the middle of the night to avoid the angry mobs that were after him.
I bet.
Right?
Can you imagine? No.
While Hassel was in jail, he told authorities he wasn't done talking and had more crimes to confess to. He then shocked police by telling them he had killed another family in California.
Oh my God.
He went on to say that 10 years prior, he had killed his common-law wife and her 3 children.
Wow.
He refused to give them any identifying details and just left it at that, saying, quote, "It was a good job and no one will ever know."
Ugh. Dude.
Yeah, right.
What are you doing?
Terrible things. Texas authorities contacted California law enforcement to see if they had any unsolved quadruple murders, but they had nothing that matched. Luckily, Hassel's story had made national news, and when it broke that he had confessed to killing another family in California, a woman in Pennsylvania saw the story in the paper, including a picture of Hassel, and thought he looked familiar.
No way.
Yes. It turned out that she visited her sister, Marie Vogel, 10 years earlier in California, where she was living with her new husband and 3 children on a farm.
I didn't even know national news was a thing back then. Right? I mean, of course it is, because there were wars and stuff and people knew about it, but still, that's wild.
Yes. Yep. A short time after her visit, Marie stopped responding to her letters, and when she got in touch with George, he told her that Marie and her kids had moved to Australia. She contacted Texas authorities and told them her story. They then got in touch with Whittier police, who were able to find documents that showed that Hassel and Marie Vogel had lived together on a farm in California. When police interviewed neighbors that had lived next door to them, they said that Hassel had told them that Marie and her kids had moved to San Francisco. They also saw Hassel bring a large trunk into his garage and then several other small bundles. He then worked inside the garage for 3 days, digging up the dirt floor.
God.
The neighbors saw him, quote, crawl under the house, throwing out dirt and rubbish. In the following days, they could smell the fumes. Oh, this is still the neighbors talking. In the following days, they could smell the fumes of burning rags coming from his kitchen. And I'm not sure what that is all about, but I assume he was just destroying evidence. A few months passed with Hassel living in the house alone until one day he showed up with a new woman and young child. He told the neighbors that the woman was his housekeeper. He moved out soon after and left the woman to clean up the house and get it ready for the next tenant. When police in Texas told Hassel what they had learned back in California, Hassel decided to give them a full confession. Because of course he did. He said that Marie had believed in, quote, spiritualism and had visions of treasure buried under the garage. According to Hassel, she made him dig up the dirt floor to look for the treasure, but nothing was found. After he killed Marie and her children, he buried them in the, quote, treasure hole, is what he called it.
What the fuck?
No. When asked why he did it, he said he just suddenly lost his temper with Marie and hit her over the head with a club. He then choked her to death, first with his hands and then with a rope. And the guy's got an MO. It's disgusting.
Yeah, obviously it's just a serial killer that's lazy. Just like...
just kills whoever's closest.
Yes, murders of convenience. It's like wants to kill people. And then he just looks over and he's like, oh, there's some people. Right. There's 9 of them living in my house. I'll just kill all of them right now.
Yep. Ugh. So once Marie was dead, he went room to room and killed her 3 children, ages 8, 3, and 1.
Babies.
The house had been torn down in the years after Hassel lived there, so he had to draw a map of the property showing authorities where he had buried the 4 bodies. Following his map, police were able to dig up the remains of Marie and her children. They each had their skulls crushed and a rope was found around each of their necks.
Yeah, so senseless. There's no reason to kill 3 little tiny baby children, none other than you want to.
Right. So Hassel was ultimately charged with 13 murders and pleaded guilty to them all and asked for the death sentence.
Well, he already stabbed his own self in the stomach 3 times, but which is so strange.
It is so strange. It all just feels like such a show.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, he just was tired. So he's like, oh, well, I want to be the center of attention now.
Yeah, it's so specific because stomach stabs are the worst, so far as I've heard, like the most painful, but also takes a really long time to die. And I don't know.
Well, the fact that
whether or not he had that information, that's just such a weird thing to do.
Right. And he stabbed himself and then immediately called out for help. Like, it just doesn't seem like he really truly wanted to die. Right. He just, for whatever reason, he was tired of
having some kind of attack.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's very creepy. Yes. It's really creepy regardless.
Yes. While he sat in jail waiting for his sentencing trial, he was said to be very happy-go-lucky and enjoyed being in the limelight. Quote, he was portrayed as a morbid celebrity who loved to chat with the children who flocked to his first floor jail cell. Who is letting their kids go to this mass murderer's
cell? Listen, I think back in the day when you didn't have a whole lot to do, that was entertainment.
Yeah,
like, so come creepy. See the freak show, come see the mass murdering dad guy in the jail, in the exterior jail thing in Texas.
Ugh, I hate it.
Yeah.
He gave many interviews where he shared his life story.
Yeah.
So Hassel was born on July 5th, 1888 in Smithville, Texas. He and his family moved to Oklahoma when he was a toddler. And when he was just 13 years old, he said his abusive father beat his mother to death.
Whoa. Wow. Well, there's your fucking route to your very specific brand of serial killing.
Yes. And this is one of those stories, again, that some articles mentioned, others didn't. So I'm not exactly sure, but I believe it. I believe that this is probably where he came from.
Yeah. Yeah. That really tracks. That really
yes.
paints a clear picture of what happened in right. his brain.
Right.
Yep.
So George ran away from home after that, and it's not clear if his father was convicted for his mother's murder, but I don't believe so.
Right.
And Hassel became a drifter. He struggled to hold on to jobs because he would steal from his employers, so he moved from place to place. He said his father was then poisoned by his stepmother and died when he was 15 years old.
Well.
Yep. After his father was killed, Hassel said, quote, "That was my first impulse to commit a crime. I went out to the place to kill the whole bunch of them, but I got too much whiskey and didn't use any gun."
Wow.
According to newspapers at the time, Hassel's stepmother died a short time later after accidentally drinking poison. Hassel was never charged with her death. Seems like quite a coincidence.
Yeah, I'll say.
I mean, but she did. If she did poison Hassel's dad, then she might have just had some accidental drinking poison.
Accidentally poisoned her own self.
Yeah,
I would imagine you have lots of poison, for real. Like,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Whip up a cocktail for somebody else and then set it aside and forget and then wake up. It's like when you fall asleep when you're 20s with like vodka sitting on your
totally.
Nightstand and then
it's water.
Yep. She pulled one of those.
Yeah. So after this, he, quote, "fell in with a bad crowd and was arrested for embezzling some money and spent 2 years in jail." At 18, he married his first wife and they had a baby together. It's said that he never met his son and only ever saw him from a distance.
Oh, thank God.
Right?
Good for that kid, yes.
When Hassel moved to Oklahoma for work, his wife and infant stayed in Texas. Hassel said that he was deeply in love with his first wife, but soon after he moved, she sent him a letter saying that she was done with him and the marriage was over.
I would say that's route number 3.
Yes. Quote, "We promised to write every day when we parted," Hassel said. "I wrote, but a week passed before I heard from my wife. Then I received a letter. It stated she was through with me. That ruined my life."
Yep. So I just started killing all of my families
right?
moving forward.
Exactly.
Yep. Yep.
And also, I'm sure he was terrible to her. There, I couldn't find any details, but you don't just leave your husband with your infant son because he went to work, right? Like,
no.
She was like, okay, goodbye. Goodbye.
Yeah. Now's my chance. I'm out.
After the divorce, he joined the army, but only 9 months later deserted to join the Navy under an assumed name.
Oh, I was like, is that a thing? Yeah, I guess if you change your name real
know.
Quick.
And then he deserted the Navy and went back to Texas to see his ex-wife, but she refused to see him. So then he went back to California and tried to join the army again.
Like, dude,
what is happening?
Get a trade or something.
Or, yeah, right? Like, if you desert the army one time, you don't desert it two more times after that.
Right. And also, what and why the Navy over the army anyway?
So this time, military authorities figured out who Hassel was, and he was arrested for desertion.
Good.
He would spend 2 years in military prison.
Guys needs to get it together.
Yes. Once he was out of prison, he continued to try to reconnect with his ex-wife, but she refused to speak to him. He even married another woman because she had a child that reminded him of the son he had with his first wife.
Mm-hmm.
He said later that he finally gave up on his true love after he tried to visit, but his son was there and had thrown rocks at him. So in 1915, a Sacramento Union newspaper story reported that Hassel, along with Marie Vogel, the first wife he murdered, and an unidentified man, were being sought by Chicago police for killing a man during a card game.
What?
Hassel was identified as the killer, but there was no follow-up to the story and no reports that Hassel ever was arrested or charged in connection with the Chicago murder. Once Hassel and Marie, who had one child before meeting Hassel, got to Whittier, they decided to adopt two more children. This would be the family that Hassel would decide to annihilate a short time later. In total, Hassel was married 5 times, but said he only loved his first wife. Susie was his 5th wife, and said he only married her out of obligation to his brother.
That is so much stuff. It was so many events.
He was 38 years old when he was finally arrested.
That is a lot.
Yes. Like,
really a lot.
Yes. And, like, this idea, and I'm not sure what adopt means, really, because he and Marie weren't legally married. They were, you know, common law. But, like, you don't take in two children on top of the one you already have. And the relationship, I gather, was not very long. You know, like, he was just, he just wanted to kill. He wanted to.
And I'm sure it was some sort of, like, farm scenario or something. You know, when they got those two kids in Whittier, it was probably like, we can't keep them. And they're like, they can help us out or who knows.
Right.
But yes. Yeah. He was very happy to have them to take their lives, I'm sure.
Yep. In the lead up to trial, Hassel was seen by multiple psychiatrists who decided he was a sociopath.
No, wow. Big fucking shock there, buddies.
Yeah. Hassel went to trial on January 26, 1927. Even though he had already pleaded guilty, the jury was to determine if he was sane at the time of his crimes. The prosecution started by reading Hassel's written confession. The defense didn't have much to say and really just tried to get the judge to declare a mistrial because of the pretrial publicity. You're like, eh. Maybe we shouldn't do this. I don't know. So after just 2 days of testimony, the jury deliberated for less than an hour before coming back with a recommendation that Hassel be sentenced to death in the electric chair.
No big surprise.
The judge agreed and originally sentenced Hassel to die just 30 days after being found guilty.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. When the judge handed down this sentence, Hassel said, quote, "Thank you, Your Honor." California declined to try Hassel for the murder of Marie and her children since she was already sentenced to death in Texas. He was already sentenced to death in Texas. Hassel's execution was pushed off by more than a year due to his case going through the appeals process. He would later tell reporters that his time in prison was the happiest of his life. Quote, "He was described as a model prisoner, always cheerful and cracking jokes. He wove doilies as a gift to visitors, fellow inmates, and even the members of the jury who sent him to death row."
What is doilies? That? What is that, like, pathology? What is going on with this guy? He's all over the place. He is a real live creeper.
Real live creeper.
And, like, did he just want somebody to, like, take care of him and keep him in line? You know, like, wow. I would really love to get all up in that little weirdo brain.
Right? I agree.
That is weird. That is some weird shit.
Yeah, I couldn't find a lot about what the psychologist that he met with said, other than they decided he was a sociopath. But, yeah, like, what does this all mean? It's very strange. When one reporter asked him why he committed the murders, Hassel said he didn't know. He then pointed to his head and said that, quote, "something was wrong up here."
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I wonder if he, kind of like a Ed Kemper.
Yeah.
Like, yes. You know, clearly, I mean, he wanted to die. He kind of weirdly tried to kill himself, but also was like, I'm not going to stop doing this. My compulsion to do this is there. And, but had that self-awareness. And so, like, once he was in prison, knowing he was going to die, he probably was like, great, I can just have a good old time.
Yeah, I can make doilies.
Make some friends. Yeah. Chat with kids on the whatever.
So creepy. But yeah, I thought really the same thing. He just Ed Kemper-ish.
Yeah. And I imagine that's probably more common than not. You know, I would imagine that people who become serial killers or just like pathological hurters of other people, I would imagine that they were so hurt, you know, most often that they became those people and they probably don't want to be doing the things that they're doing. It's just a pathology that they cannot control. So I think if they're being honest or vulnerable, I think that they don't want to be doing those things, even though they can't help themselves. Right. You know,
yeah, and it's a relief when they're finally forced to stop.
Yes, yep,
yeah. At one point, Hassel was sent to the death chamber only for his execution to be temporarily stayed by the governor, so Hassel's appeal could continue to go through the court system. When he left the chamber, reporters were outside and asked him how he had spent the past 12 hours preparing to die. Hassel told them that he slept like a log, ate a hearty meal, and had spent time reading the New Testament. He then said that all women needed to read the 11th chapter of Corinthians because it, quote, dealt with bobbed hair and such things.
Cool, dude. Great. Wow. No. Just when we're starting to get a little bit of a crack of an insight into you, you pull out Corinthians bobbed hair advice.
I got stuck in the newspaper archives on this story, and between the weird shit that he came up with and the other fascinating articles surrounding his stories, I was like, it's crazy. You know, like,
it's really out there.
100 years ago, sort of what people were talking about and the ads telling ladies to go read the Bible to know what to do with their bobbed hair, like, oh, so gross.
Parting words.
So on February 10th, 1928, at 12:29 a.m. George Hassel was put to death in the electric chair at Texas State Penitentiary in Huntsville. He was said to be smiling and calm to the very end, and his final words were that he was prepared to meet his maker. It took 3 jolts of electricity to end his life. When no one collected his remains, he was buried in the prison cemetery.
No big surprise.
Yep. And I tried to find out what his last meal was and could not find it.
Oh, I'm now dying to know.
Me too.
I mean, back then, you probably had like 4 options.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Steak.
Mm-hmm. Fried pork chicken. Chop.
Fried chicken. Yeah, I'm going to guess fried chicken. Texas. Maybe steak. Steak.
Yeah.
Steak and potatoes.
And that's the story of George Jefferson Hassel, man.
Good lordy, man, oh man. What a ding-a-ling. What a terrible, terrible... Ugh. That old-timey act stuff, like Lizzie Borden, I think that's why she's so scary. That whole story is so scary because it's such a mood, too. Yes. You know, farmhouse axe murder shit is such a mood.
Yes, ball peen it's, hammers, no.
Yes, no, it's so sinister. It's so eerie and evil and awful. And then for him to be just such a fucking wild card of a weird dude. Mm-hmm. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, it reminds me of the other case. I'm pretty sure it's still unsolved. The family that was murdered in the barn. Yeah.
The German case that everybody's covered. Yeah, it's so creepy. It's just captivating.
Yes.
It grabs your brain and doesn't let it go because you're just like, what were they doing? What happened? Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And just, the whole thing. To imagine him going room to room and killing 7 people in one night. Mm-mm. Like,
methodically. Mm-mm. Yeah. Yep.
So
and then to have some of them have awareness of what was happening to their family.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Yep.
That's not cool.
No. Well, there's some nightmare fuel for everyone.
Thanks, listeners. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. Thanks for taking us there. Gah, good one. Terrible. Well done.
Thanks.
Well, Sadie's stomach started officially, like, audibly grumbling. We continue to be under siege by our own bodies now. Our own bodies have taken up arms. I don't know what's there.
My stomach is now taking... I'm under siege by my own self. My stomach.
That's what I was trying to say just now, and I didn't actually say it very well.
All right, man.
Yeah, your own body is taking up arms, its own arms.
Yeah.
But we got a little name times, and we'll do a couple shouty-outies. And then we will let Sadie eat some coleslaw because she made coleslaw, turkey burgers.
The dressing is delicious.
Yeah, I'm having a Trader Joe's bag salad because they're fucking genius. And trying out the dill pickle falafels. I'm real curious about those. And I was just telling Sadie, if any of you need an excuse, go to Trader Joe's, which I have to drive to South Bend, Indiana to do, which is 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
I almost drove by. I've been calling her Amy Pony Boner's house to give her the bird. Our Supreme Court Justice, Amy Pony Boner, lives in South Bend, Indiana.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Are people out there burning it down?
I don't know. I decided that I was not going to waste the energy on driving by Amy Pony Boner's house, but I'm kind of curious. But anyway, that's the real point of the story is to get the fucking Chantilly cream sheet cake at Trader Joe's tomorrow.
Do it,
guys. Holy God. Has anybody had this thing? Be Still My Heart. No. And the vegan buffalo dip is a revelation. There's so much flavor in that weird, weird little vegan buffalo dip. Anyway.
God, I'm so hungry.
Okay. Too. You can tell if I'm hungry because I just start naming foods off. It's name time, babies. It's name time.
It's name time.
There's some great ones too. A little shorty sweetie list again, but we got Big Ugly West Virginia.
Big Ugly West Virginia.
Big Ugly West Virginia.
That's so funny because West Virginia is gorgeous.
It is. It's very beautiful. But
this part of it, apparently.
It also sounds like a child's, what's the word? Insult.
Yes.
Yeah. Get out of here, Big Ugly. Big Ugly West Virginia. Somebody has an orthopedic vet who fixed their cat's broken leg, and the name was Dr. Stubbs.
Oh, he understands.
Wasn't Myrtle our childhood neighbor? Wasn't her last name Stubb? Myrtle Stubbs?
Yeah, it was.
Myrtle Stubbs.
Myrtle Stubbs.
Myrtle Stubbs, which is a great name.
Yeah.
Now that you've brought it up. Southern friends. Somebody has some Southern friends. Dick Hanberry. This next one is so Southern. Pink Persons.
Oh my god.
They really, I need more Southern names. I need, yes, our Southern listeners to please specifically South Carolina, like that, please, that, yeah, kind of Southerns. Mm-hmm. I need some Dorcases. Yes. I need some Pink Persons.
Pink, and it's spelled P-I-N-K.
Yeah, Pink god. Persons and Lemon Shell McWhirther. That is some South Carolina shit right there.
My goodness. Say it again.
Oh, McWhirter. McWhirter. Lemon Shell. All one word. Lemon Shell. McWhirter.
I'm speechless.
Like, yeah.
I need it.
Yep. If you're watching Southern Charm on Bravo, there's definitely going to be a Lemon Shell McWhirter.
Yes.
Up in those parties.
100%.
Lemon Probably Shell. A man lives with his mother.
Lemon Shell.
What was
Shell.
That one guy's name on there that lived with his mom who had a female-ish name? Like Shelly. Shelly.
Ashley? I have no idea.
Yeah, yes, like an Ashley. Yes, it's always like an Ashley, yeah. McWhirter. Lemon Shell McWhirter. And this made me laugh so hard. So funny. I recently started working at a law firm, and one of our partners' last names is Mastro Berte. And I have no idea how it's pronounced, which made me laugh even harder. Mastroberte. Mastro Berte.
It's like when you're all alone and you're feeling fancy.
Exactly.
Fancy alone time night.
Were you masturbating? No, I was masturbating. Oh, no. Shit. No. Can't you hear the accordion music playing in the background? Can't you see my Chianti bottles with the candles burning the wax down on the sides? I was masturbating.
Oh shit.
No idea how it's pronounced. I just love that.
Well, this is god, somebody our dear listener is working with. If you figure out how the last name is pronounced, let,
yes,
us know.
Astro Berte. Thank you for that. It was
treat.
Such a treat. And at a time, you know, this week, exactly. Lots of ups and downs, had some happy moments and some really down, down, down moments. And that came at a down, down, down moment. I just hope that you've known LOL'd, like legitimately LOL'd. So thank you.
Shit.
Also, just a reminder that if you're feeling super down, you might just need to take a fucking nap, because I did today and I was really low this morning. And then I took a nap and I felt 70% better. Not that naps and jogs fix problems.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need medication. Sometimes you need to fucking vote for a different, you know, whole new government. Mm-hmm. But also try napping.
Right?
Try napping.
Yes.
Or bike riding.
Right.
Those things help me a lot.
Yeah. I'm at that point where I was saying earlier to Courtney that I might need to be checking in with my doctor and up in the old Lexapro
yeah, for a while. Turn up the dial a tiny bit. I don't think that's the worst idea.
You know, I have, it's always been my go-to to just like push through.
Yep.
And it'll get better and it'll be fine and I can handle it. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, why though? Like, has the years of therapy that I've just gone through and like,
yeah,
if it's not taught me anything, it's that sometimes you have to take a stop and think, how can I actually just get through this hard time? And I don't want to make it go away or erase it, but I also can focus better and help more if I'm not full of anxiety, right?
Also, those cortisol levels do not need to be that high. That is so dangerous. And that's 100%. What I start to feel.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like feeling like, okay, this is low-grade persistent. And then also when I start to sort of realize there's a difference between like disassociating and like derealizing and depersonalizing. I think in the past I've said that when I have panic attacks, I disassociate, but it's actually derealization is what I'm experiencing. But I have also noticed there's a lesser grade of it that is like definitely sort of a disassociation where I'm not fully in that like horrible black and white flattened out sort of mode. But yeah, I've been doing a lot of that lately. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this is not good. This means that my body is in stressed out mode. I'm in a little bit of fight or flight here. And so, take care of those lizard brains.
Definitely.
Feed them what they need. Sleep. Lexapro. Mm-hmm. Don't really try to avoid the alcohol. It's not going to help you. Mm-hmm. She's not your friend right now.
No. Yeah.
You know,
lots of deep breaths. Just taking in what's your surroundings right now. Are you safe? What do you feel? Mm-hmm. What do you see?
Yep. And then also put on really fucking intense music. That really helps me a lot. Drive around.
Yes. You know what else helps is writing stories about family annihilators.
It's been a really nice distraction. I cannot stress it enough, you guys. I mean, we need to stay fucking focused and activated and active and communicating. Mm-hmm. But part of like keeping your cortisol levels down is going to be that self-care bullshit, and for people like us that requires distraction. I can't sit in a bubble bath. That's just gonna make me think about it more. So find that activity that helps you feel better.
Just that I'm hearing a lot of that this is the long haul. This isn't going to be, you know, we have to be prepared to fight this fight for a long while, so not burning out.
Yep. And it's always the darkest before the dawn. We recorded our Patreon episode earlier and I was screaming that at our patrons, but I'm going to scream it at you now. It is always the darkest before the dawn.
Yep.
Gen Z, Gen Alpha, they're coming. Gen X, honestly, is pretty fucking cool. We're kind of shitty, but also pretty cool. Millennials, very cool. We're so close, you guys. We are so close. I could taste it. We just have to not let it slip away.
That's right. Anyway. That's the one thing. I look at my kids every day and I think, if I can get them to adulthood.
The kids are all right.
They will. Yes. I think that having Gen X, Millennial, Gen Z parents is going to create an incredible generation coming.
Yeah. Sadie and I were talking about it earlier. Oh, go fucking figure that people who are raised by deeply, deeply traumatized individuals are making poor choices for their communities, and people who are raised by slightly less traumatized people are making much better choices for their communities. So we're so close. We're so close.
We just got a little America. Right. Gotta hang on, guys.
Yes, and boom booms. Just calm down. My God, what do you like?
Yeah, this is it for you. Just wait.
Go to the pool or something. Go to the car. Whatever you do. Go to the fucking golf club cart center.
Right? Golf club
course
center.
Course. Go to it.
Go to it. Chill
so
out.
So relaxing.
Yeah.
You don't need to control other people's bodily autonomy.
No.
You can just go to the golf course cart center.
Mm-hmm. We'll get there.
You know. Anyway.
Hey.
In the meantime.
Thank you guys who support us. I keep saying, well, I forgot to raise up our prices. So quick, hurry before I remember.
Yeah, I know. I thought about that today. Yeah, quick. Whatever. We're going to raise our prices next week.
Courtney and I, if you haven't noticed, we care about money because we need it to live. But yes. It's just not high on the priority list.
Yeah, I would rather pay money to not have to think about money.
I know, right? Or have to deal with the inner workings of Patreon.
Oh my God, I'd rather
die. So one of these days, we do plan to up our prices. So be prepared at some point.
Yeah.
So thank you so much to Maureen U-R.
Maureen, you are the best. You are nothing but the best. All the rest wants to be Maureen, and so they put themselves to the test, and they will never rest until they try to rest, like WREST, the title for Maureen, but they cannot do it because she cannot be seen because she's so high up above the rest that they will not be able to rest the title for Maureen. Yes. I hope I used the word rest correctly. One second, let me just do a little rest. Forcibly pull something from someone's grasp.
Yay! Yay! You did it.
Woo! John Maureen, they will not rest. The rest will not rest it from your grasp. The title of best.
Hey,
better than the rest.
I don't think we have had any Hawaii patrons.
Holy
right?
Fucking.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
So thank you so much to our first Hawaiian patron, Christine T.
Christine time. Everybody is on Christine time. When it's time to turn your clocks back, everybody's interested in doing it because it means it can be on Christine time. It means that the sun is always shining when you want it to be. And you never feel sad when you wake up and it's dark because it's never dark on Christine time. Your kids aren't cranky. They do want to go to bed when they're supposed to. You don't feel like it's really, really late, and it's not because you're on Christine time.
God, I want to be on Christine time.
The best time. Yeah, we should just pose it to the United States government that we just all be on CTT.
Right? Christine time.
Christine time
today.
Was it a CTT or CTT? Yeah, it's all Christine time, bitch. We don't have to fucking deal with this shit anymore.
Today, tomorrow, the next day.
CTTT. Christine time today, tomorrow. Timeless time. It's timeless time.
Thank you so much to Tara F. from Portland.
Terrifying me with her beauty and her grace and her body in space because she has awareness of where she is and how she moves and how she moves me. I am terrified by the feelings inside. Yes, it's terrifying with that being her presence because it's so powerful. Get what I'm saying?
Yes. No, you're doing really good tonight.
Thanks. I didn't think it was gonna. Yes. I'm telling you. Or the Trader Joe's Chantilly cream cheesecake.
Thank you so much to Jill Barry S.
Jill Barry, do not tarry. Do not worry. It is Jill Barry. Do you know what you're up against now? Jill Barry is gonna show you how.
Yes.
Jill Barry. To Mari, not today. To Mari, Jill Barry will find a way to bring you there. And everywhere is Jill Barry's modus operandi. I love you, Jill Barry.
Yes.
Which is a fucking incredible name.
So amazing.
You know?
Last but not least, thank you so much to our UK sister. And I say that because her name is Sarah D.
Oh!
Which just so happens to be our very best friend's name. We mm-hmm. call her SD, Sarah SD. D.
Yep. So listen, if you're like our SD, you are fucking brilliant, hilarious, unstoppable, fucks given none, mm-hmm. zero.
Hardest nada. Worker you'll ever meet.
I mean, legitimately the hardest worker you'll ever meet. Gorgeous hair, mm-hmm. beautiful skin.
Face.
Yeah, I mean, the whole fucking thing, mm-hmm. but specifically, like, magnificent hair, magnificent skin, and fucking, yeah, just badass. Just
funniest person you'll ever meet.
Legitimately, and also a force of nature. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yep.
Brilliant. Everything.
Yep.
So, welcome, SD.
Welcome.
SD2, or SD also, not two, because I don't want to put you under our SD, but SD also.
Yes. Yep. You are in good company.
You're the best. You guys are the best.
You're the best. So much the best.
Yep.
And we are here for you. We will continue to be here for you. That will never change. You just let us know. How can we help you? What's going on?
Mm-hmm. And if you get that Chantilly sheet cake, let me know how you like it.
If you want a coleslaw recipe, also let me know.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Do you
want
to put the coleslaw dressing on the cake? No.
No, I think you should put it on the burger, though.
I'm going, 100%. Yes. Yeah.
Every time you have a sandwich, you should just put coleslaw on it.
That's all I've been wanting lately. I don't know why.
It's so good. My friend in town makes pupusas, and if you've never had a pupusa, it's like masa with shit and some delicious mm-hmm. stuff in the middle, and then
so hungry.
Coleslaw, and then this amazing hot sauce.
Oh,
all foods max coleslaw. Anyway, in the meantime, or whatever, if you need a distraction, come find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok. You can go to our website, theywillkill.com. You can send us an email at theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, you can. Please rate, review, subscribe. We continue to be getting lots more not great reviews.
Yeah.
So if you like us, let us know.
Yeah, we would really appreciate that. That would be super keen. Fuck and yeah.
Thank you, AJ Bergans, for your music.
Thank you so much.
By the way, his kids just get cuter every day. I just gotta
say. They really
say,
do. Ugh. They are so cute. It's really gonna break my heart when I have to
sue them.
Depose them.
I know.
Yeah, but
they've asked for it by being adorable and perfect.
Yeah,
in every
it's really
way.
Kind of fueling my fire a little bit more. I'm like, when you get that like feeling of, you're so cute, I'm gonna sue mm-hmm. you.
No way we're suing them, so they're stealing our thunder.
Yeah.
They're too cute, and we aren't as cute next to them.
Yeah, we're that vindictive. Suing twin toddlers.
Yeah, almost 2-year-olds.
Don't care about anybody else being cuter than us. You know, that's not really a thing that we're concerned about until it's our toddler niece and nephew.
And remember,
it's always darkest before the dawn, babies. Get out and vote, 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 vote.
Or even better, go run for office.
Yeah, run for office, 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 office.
Run for office. Yes. I know. I was like, I'm going to join the library board so they don't ban all my books. And I'm going to join the...
Anything. Yeah, yes.
Whatever
anything.
You can do to...
Have a conversation with your neighbor. At whatever. All of it. Do it. We can do this. We love you.
Yes, we do.
We'll see you next time.
We'll see you really soon. Don't even worry about it.
No.
Love you.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
I'm journalist Carolyn Osorio, and I invite you to join me and my co-host, Brandon Morgan, on our podcast, Criminal Mischief. From law enforcement officers seeking justice to victims' families seeking answers, every week there's a new case and a new victim whose story deserves to be told. New episodes of Criminal Mischief drop every Tuesday.